and welcome to Law Matters for another year here on Aboriginal Radio. Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour. I hope you can stay with me. Law Matters for listeners new to the program is brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. It's been running fortnightly for about 8 years. Is it really that long? And the main point of this program is to just get on and have a yarn with you and find out what are our concerns in the community about our legal rights, what services are available, and introduce you and enlighten you about a whole lot of the issues that are facing our mob within the criminal justice system. I hope you can stay with me. Coming up later this program, we're going to find out all about a report that was done by the Human Rights Watch, a shocking report into Australia's cruelty to Aboriginal people with disabilities behind bars. Do stay tuned for that. But in the first half of the program, I'm going to be having a yarn with someone who's really well known to a lot of people here in Western Australia, a fella by the name of Kevin Blurton. Now, for those of you who don't know Kevin, and we know that Blurtons are a big mob here in the West, but Kevin has been a court officer at the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia for 30 years. An incredible feat. He joins me in a moment from Bunbury, and I'm looking forward to turning back the clock and finding out about those very early years of the Aboriginal Legal Service for Kevin right up until present day. Stay tuned. Kevin Blurton joining us next.
Down on the stairs.
Oh, yeah. The awesome sound of Dan Sultan and Your Love Is Like a Song. Dan, heading to Western Australia in March, so looking forward to that. This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Good to have your company. Jodie Hoffman with you, and to the program for the very first time, I'd like to welcome Kevin Blurton. Kevin, how are you?
I'm well, Jodie, thank you.
Kevin, for those who don't already know, is our senior court officer at the Bunbury branch of the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Now, we may as well call you Man of the Month, Kevin, because it's been a big one. February saw your mark of the 30 years at the Aboriginal Legal Service, an incredible feat. Tell us how you first got involved with the Aboriginal Legal Service 30 years ago.
Well, prior to starting with the legal service, I was living in Brookton, where my family come from. I worked as a roustabout in shearing teams, and then I worked on a farm on the off-season when seasonal work finished. I actually probably came into it by a little bit of accident. I saw a ad in the paper on a Saturday, I think, for a field officer in Narrogin. And I said to my partner then, I think I could do this job. And she was very supportive of me and encouraged me to actually apply for the job, and which I did. And I eventually got the job.
That's in the late 80s, Kevin, and we've got lots of ground to cover in the next little while here on Aboriginal Radio while we talk to you about all that. But you mentioned roustabout. Before we talk about taking on that role in Narrogin, how common was it to be a roustabout in those years?
Very common. That was some of the work that that you did in the country areas. You were either a shearer or a roustabout. Yeah, it was fairly common, Jade.
Now, we do have a national listenership, but Blurton is a pretty big name here in the West. Tell us more about your mob, Kev.
I'm 60. I've spent half my working life working with ALS. I'm a proud Noongar man from the wheat belt in the southwest of Western Australia. My ancestors are Ballardong people. My mother's family are from Brookton. They're Collards and Maguires, and I spent a lot of my early life in Brookton. My father's family are from Curding, the Blurtons and Kickets. So I've got a pretty big family connection throughout the wheat belt and the southwest of Western Australia.
You're not kidding. Okay, so let's turn the clock back. It's 1988. You see this job that's looking for a field officer. Now, field officers these days are referred to as court officers, but a field officer, bearing in mind that in these years, the Aboriginal Legal Service has been going for not longer than 10 years, so it's relatively early years of the service. What happened after you saw that ad?
Well, as I said, I applied for the job, received it. I got some training in the Perth office. From my memory, it was either 2 to 4 weeks training. I was trained by a bloke by the name of Ian Orrick. Ian obviously trained a lot of our older court officers, or field officers as they were known then. He wasn't a lawyer, but he had a good knowledge of the law. He must have done a pretty good job, because a lot of us old field officers stayed around and worked in the ALS for lots of years.
Mm. Incredible. So what sort of issues were you representing people on in court in those days?
Oh, look, what happened was when I started, I went to the Narrogin office. There was no lawyer in the office. There was a secretary. She turned up on the Monday, and she told me she hadn't had leave for some 2 years, so she went on leave. I was left to man the office. so I was answering phones, giving legal advice out and appearing in court. Those days in Narrogin, there was JP's court, and the magistrate would come on a monthly circuit. So, they were very daunting times, and something that stood me in good stead for later years. I think it was a hard grounding, Jode. So, but it was something that I appreciated in later years.
Sometimes those baptisms of fire, getting thrown in at the deep end, can be the best thing that can happen, hey, because you do get a really good understanding and cross-section of what you're up against.
I think so, yes.
Now, you would have had probably a toddler in tow by then, one of three to come. Would that be right? Was your firstborn born at that stage?
Yes, my oldest boy was born at that stage, he would have been only two or three, I think, when I first started.
So you've gone from roustabout work to manning the phones, giving out legal office, pretty much single-handedly working out of the Narrogin office because the secretary there has gone off on well-deserved leave after 2 years. What did you think? Must have been a bizarre transition from, firstly outdoor to inside work, but also that the nature of the work that you were doing must have been, a real eye-opener?
It certainly was. Didn't have some really good experience with police officers when I was growing up, so that was one of the reasons why I wanted to work with the legal service. I saw the injustices that Aboriginal people face. Certainly my father told me stories that when he lived in Badgerling, which is just out of Querting, the welfare would come there and try to take the kids away from their parents. They had a warning system in place where someone would tell them, if there was a strange car coming up the driveway, and they'd take off and run away up into the bush and stay up in the bush until dark so they weren't caught and removed from their parents. So I was certainly interested in being involved in the law after I heard some of those stories. It also alarmed me when I heard that Aboriginal people weren't allowed in town sites after 6 p.m. And if they were caught, they'd be imprisoned. And I think that happened on a frequent basis. There was also the discrimination that Aboriginal people faced. Weren't allowed in hotels and that. So I was certainly encouraged to want to change those sorts of views.
My guest is Kevin Blurton, Senior Court Officer at the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, Bunbury Office, in the role for 30 years earlier this month. An incredible feat. Another incredible feat, Kevin, we're all so proud, was that you were recently named as the NATSL's Trevor Christian Award recipient for a male worker. Now, basically, what that means is that all of the Aboriginal legal services around Australia can nominate people that they think are worthy to be considered for this award. One female is chosen and one male nationally. You were named as the national recipient. And we're all just so stoked for you because for anyone that knows you, you're a man of great humility. You're so well respected and regarded. And it was just wonderful to see you acknowledged in that way nationally, Kevin.
Yeah, look, Jode, I was pleasantly surprised. I think it was a really good week, being, recognised for the 30 years of working with the ALS, and I think it was the icing on the cake when I found out that I'd be receiving a national award, and it's certainly something I'll always look back on with great pride in years to come.
Let's look at some of the highlights for you from a working perspective during those 30 years with the Aboriginal Legal Service. So there's some particular times or people that you've sort of met or assisted over the years that, that have really kept a special place in your heart?
Look, there's too many things to try and remember, but working with ALS, you're working, you know, there's lots of, you're meeting lots of family. There's, sometimes it's an emotional time and people are going through difficult times, whether it be through alcohol abuse and more recently drugs. But certainly if you go back on things, there's lots of things, but there's nothing that really stands out. But one of the things that I do think is something that I look back on is when you do something for some of your clients and they actually give you some thanks, because sometimes it can be a thankless job, you know, working with ALS.
I imagine you'd be pretty well known on the streets of Bunbury, Kevin.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to think so, anyway.
Do people stop you in the street and go, oh, Kev, you know, got a legal question for you?
Oh, look, when I worked in Narrogin, you know, everybody knew my phone number and people would ring me up late at night asking me to go up to the Narrogin lockup, and they were in the lockup, and so, you know, there was certainly different areas of work that happened when we first started. It's now more easygoing. We've got more resources to work with than that. So yeah, things have improved greatly. Especially working with ALS.
What are some of the main changes you've seen in the 30 years that you've had with the ALS?
I think we've still got the same problems. You know, there's alcohol's a problem. You know, there's overcrowding in our housing. There's grandparents looking after their grandchildren. And now it's progressed to, you know, drugs, and meth seems to be a big problem now. So, you know, we certainly have different problems on a day-to-day basis, I think.
And you're based in Bunbury, Kevin, and for the benefit of our national listeners, Bunbury is a regional city about 180 kilometres south of Perth, but a city all unto itself. So I imagine a lot of the same issues are facing young people and families in Bunbury as are in Perth and other big regional centres across the country, hey?
That's correct, yeah. Look, I think we all face the same sort of problems. I think there seem to be some more mental health issues these days because of the drugs and that. But I've certainly enjoyed my time working with ALS, and, you know, while I'm still healthy and I've got the passion, I will continue to work with the ALS.
I mean, 30 years is an incredible feat in any job, but as you said, that, you know, the ALS, you know, the nature of the work is very challenging. It's emotional work because, you know, it's real people at the end of the day that we're working with, and you want to, you know, ensure that there is justice for our mob and that everybody has access to justice and can be respected and represented in court and helped through that legal process. But 30 years, Kev, what has motivated you to keep doing what you do for so long?
I think one of the motivations is that I've had a pretty stable, working environment. You know, I think I've only had probably three secretaries in the 30 years, full-time. I've had five managing court officers. There was definitely wasn't one in Harrigan, but since I've been in Bunbury, there's been five managing lawyers that manage the office. So that's been something that's kept me going. And plus my children, I've got three children, and all three children work with the ALS.
Which is incredible, isn't it?
Yes. My oldest boy's been working now with the ALS for 9 years. He works in the Bunbury office with me.
Yep.
My daughter, she's been in with the service in Perth for 2 to 3 years. And my youngest boy, he started when he was about 18, I believe. So he's done 6 years in the service, and that's certainly something that keeps me going. It provides good dialogue when we actually meet in social gatherings, and you know, we're always talking about, or probably trying to outdo each other. You know, I got this sort of result. And, it's really good.
Yeah, and I know that your kids are all incredibly proud of you, Kevin, as we are, as all your colleagues. We are just so proud of the acknowledgement that you're getting for so many years of hard work. But I tell you what, when we put the a notice up on our Facebook page about your 30 years and the award and all this sort of stuff, we've never had so many likes and shares in the history of the Aboriginal Legal Service Facebook page. There was just so many well wishes for you. And last week, of course, all the staff got to get together with you all the staff in the, you know, around the Perth area and Bunbury got to congratulate you personally for your amazing efforts over the years. And it was just wonderful to see you surrounded by your colleagues, but also all of your family in the one place at one time, because that's, I imagine, pretty rare, hey?
It's very rare, Jodie. Look, I was really pleased to see so many people come out and have some drinks with me, and to have my family there, you know, my three children, my son's wife and my grandchild, you know, that was... because family is everything to me. So, you know, I was extremely pleased that everybody could celebrate with me in that setting.
No, it was a fantastic celebration and well deserved for you, Kevin Blurton. No inkling of retiring at this stage, 30 years strong into the role as the senior court officer with the Bunbury office, which is a unique role in here in Western Australia for the rest of the country, because court officers are all Aboriginal people. Many are local or to the region that they work, where that is possible, but provide great assistance to community members and clients and to magistrates, judges, lawyers, all that, to try and paint the picture of, you know, things aren't just black and white. This could be the reason why this offending is happening, or it's really an important role, Kevin, isn't it, in sort of keeping those lines of communication open so that every opportunity is given for the court system to understand the needs of that client as well as sort of going through the court process.
Well, that's right, Jade. We're the voice of, you know, these people who are in trouble. So, you know, we have to try and express to the magistrates and that, you know, what's going on in their lives and do the best job we can for our clients. And hopefully, you know, that's what I've done over the years that I've been working with the service.
Hopes for the future, Kev?
I will continue to work with ALS for as long as I'm healthy and I think I probably can do another, I don't know, 6 to 8 years before retirement. I'll think about retirement. So, yeah, look, I've got no inclination of retiring at this stage anyway.
Good on you. Kev, congratulations and an amazing feat that you have achieved over those 30 years. Congratulations also on the Trevor Christian Memorial Award, which will actually be awarded to you in March in Hobart. That's pretty exciting. So you'll be over there for that. And a big time. So definitely our man of the month. And thank you for having a yarn with us, Kevin. And congratulations on all of your achievements to date and many more to come.
Thank you, Jodie. It's been a very good week last week.
Kevin Blurton, Senior Court Officer with our Bunbury office, and loved by all who know him. Good on you, Kevin Blurton. This is Law Matters, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Good to have your company.
You may talk to Jesus on this royal telephone.
Hi, this is Joanne Dodd, and you're listening to Noongar Radio.
If your ear is hurt, or if you think something isn't right with them, and they feel funny, ask your mum to go get your ears checked out at your health clinic. Healthy ears are happy ears. Strong hearing, strong start.
This message was brought to you by the National Indigenous Ear Health Campaign and an Australian Government initiative.
Otis Redding taking us back to the 1960s and the Match Game. Before that was the ever-popular Fitzroy Express and Better Man. You're listening to the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Jodie Hoffman with you in the final part of our program, so I hope you can stay with us because some really interesting and shocking information coming your way in our next interview, which is about cruelty to Aboriginal people with disabilities while they're imprisoned. There has been a very comprehensive report put together on this by Human Rights Watch. Too often reports are done, an enormous amount of effort goes into completing those reports, and they can get overlooked. They can just be key notes picked out of it. One journalist felt that it was worthy enough to do a five-part series on, which he did for New Matilda, which many of our listeners would be aware of, the New Matilda publication. His name is Michael Brawl, and he joins us now. Michael, thank you for your time. How are you?
Good, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Michael, before we talk about the report and the effect that it had on you while you were writing it, I want to just give our listeners a bit of a introduction into you, your background in law and journalism, and why this area of topic interested you so much.
Sure. So I've been writing about various human rights and social justice issues, starting at New Matilda in 2009. And I started a law degree in 2010. And the first time I wrote about the criminal justice system and Aboriginal people was a case in the Northern Territory where a group of five white men beat an Aboriginal man to death. And the judge sentenced the gentleman who killed the Aboriginal man quite leniently, saying that they were all of good character and this was totally out of character for them and things like that, which I thought was pretty awful. And that was reprinted in the Indigenous Law Bulletin. So since then, I guess, as a writer, I've often come back to things like Aboriginal deaths in custody, racism of the police, and things of that nature. And in terms of legal experience, I've done things like I was at the National Justice Project for about 8 months, where I worked on things like Cop Watch. So I have some experience, I guess, on the legal side and the media side in addressing these issues. And I guess the first time I became aware specifically of how Aboriginal people with disabilities are mistreated in the criminal justice system was when I heard about the case in Marlon Noble. And I kind of dug around until I found a government report. And I think that was when various people in the media started giving it a bit more attention.
And for those, I'm sure people will prick up their ears and go, Marlon Noble, I've heard that name. And well, he was an Aboriginal gentleman who was imprisoned here in Western Australia for a decade for crimes, and there was no evidence that he actually committed those crimes. And I'm sure that the deeper you dig into an area like this, Michael, the more horrific the findings can be. Credit to the report, which was done by Human Rights Watch, in particular a researcher by the name of Kriti Sharma. Her research often focuses on human rights violations against persons with disabilities, but there was a whole lot of people working on this report, and you were intrigued enough to kind of go, you can't just, you know, run something like this in one story. There's a lot more to it. So the result was a five-part series that was printed behind bars, parts 1 to 5, Australia's Shocking Cruelty to Aboriginal People with Disabilities. I don't know where we start, but tell us some of the main things that you wanted to simplify through your writings.
Sure. So what I think the report shows is the context is that Aboriginal people are grossly overrepresented in the criminal justice system and incarceration and so on. And it also particularly discriminates against people with disabilities in various ways. And when you come to people who are Aboriginal and have disabilities, they're particularly likely to face discrimination throughout their life, and they're particularly likely to wind up in prison. And when they're in prison, they're particularly vulnerable to being mistreated. And the kind of mistreatment that they face is all sorts. So before, we've seen reports on things like people being imprisoned without trial because people with disabilities, if they're found not fit to stand trial, they're just incarcerated anyway in, I think, various states and territories. And the report takes a look at some of the heinous ways that they're mistreated. So just to go into a few of them, one is various people, it's kind of implicitly known that people are bullied in prison. But people with disabilities can be vulnerable to that in particular ways. And so there's stories of, I should warn that this can be quite distressing, but there's stories of Aboriginal people with disabilities being bullied and verbally abused, being subjected to racist and ableist abuse for their disability and their Aboriginal status, people being sexually assaulted and then not feeling safe reporting it to anyone, having the sense that no one really cares. People with disabilities needing people to provide specific support for their needs, so they're called carers. And the carers being selected among prisoners rather than professionals because it's cheaper. And numerous individuals selected as carers were convicted of sex crimes, and so the carers wound up sexually assaulting the imprisoned Aboriginal person with a disability. And the victim is unable to report this because they're just so incredibly vulnerable and reliant on the carer. And there's a lot of these kind of heinous stories and really upsetting testimonies. And it's not just that there's this cruelty that the prison system doesn't do anything to address, but there's also this really sickening and upsetting lack of catering to the basic needs of people with disabilities. So in one prison, I think there was something like 1,000 prisoners and there was one toilet. And for someone, and I identify with this because I have a J-patch myself, but for people who had limited continence and limited ability to wait to go to the bathroom, there was one gentleman who said he had to sit in a nappy all day because it just wasn't feasible for him to make it to the bathroom in time. And this kind of degrading way that people were treated, that there were Aboriginal people with disabilities who'd be transported from one prison to another because they're all overcrowded. And they'd sit in the back of these vans for hours on end without having toilet breaks, and so they'd wind up soiling themselves, and then the other prisoners in the van with the person with a disability would beat them up because they didn't want to sit in the van with someone who just had an involuntary bowel movement or urinated on themselves. And the way that the prison just degrades and shows a complete lack of regard for the dignity of these prisoners is incredibly distressing and horrible.
It is absolutely horrific. I'm chatting with Michael Brawl about a series of reports that he did on a report on prisoners with disabilities that was done by Human Rights Watch. And Michael is actually a journalist who looked comprehensively throughout the report so that more of that information would be available to us, the reading public, who may have otherwise not have seen the report. Michael, that is horrific, and I was staggered to think that quite often the care of a prisoner with a disability was given to another prisoner, because obviously different areas of specific need are required depending on the disability, and would require training, not just another prisoner to be looking after a prisoner with a disability with that higher needs. That's incredible.
I think what this is ultimately about, and the major issue which needs to be addressed, is that there's a systematic underfunding of basic things like medical services and accessibility and just basic just providing for the basic needs of people in prison. And I think what this relates to is there's a widespread sense in Australia that prisoners deserve what they get and they should be treated harshly because they've broken the law. And insofar as any government invests in things relating to the criminal justice system, it's more police, more prisons, more guards, higher walls. And there's very much a sense that we should treat people in prison harshly. And so if someone says, well, maybe we should, you know, have more nurses or psychiatric care in prison, the response is, do you want a pedophile to be treated nicer after what they've done? You know, do you want that for a terrorist or a murderer? And I think the idea of just basic humanity to people who've committed crimes is kind of scowled at by large sections of the public. And the result is people who are particularly vulnerable in prison really suffer. And prisons really aren't built for a lot of the people who are in them. So for Aboriginal people with disabilities, they'll face systemic discrimination their whole life. And instead of getting the care that they need, they'll wind up in prison because of their psychosocial disabilities, making them harder to integrate into society and, you know, gain gainful employment and fit in. And so they wind up in prison where they don't fit in and where the prison just is completely unequipped to deal with them. And so there's stories of prisoners who spend years in solitary confinement. And solitary confinement's a form of torture. Under international law, you're not meant to use it under any circumstances against people with disability. And, you know, using it for 2 weeks on an able-bodied person, I think, is considered torture. And so we have this unbelievable cruelty just because we're warehousing these people who shouldn't be in prison in the first place. Because, you know, for people on the margins of society, there's just no investment in providing basic care and services for them. So I think this is very much a systemic issue, and we need to think about, you know, how we can create a kinder society even to people who've been marginalised and people who've been stigmatised.
Solitary confinement, harassment, bullying, sexual assault, it's incredibly grim. And I think one of the key issues that you just tapped on there, Michael, was prisons are not equipped to deal with people with a disability. There needs to be something else, doesn't there, that is qualified enough to treat people. And just because you are a prisoner, it doesn't mean that you don't have human rights, and we all deserve dignity, hey?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so little money given to basic things like making sure that there are wheelchairs or shower chairs for people who can't stand up in the shower. Like, just really basic things that just show this complete disrespect for the dignity of human beings.
Now, I'm sure there's a lot of families listening in who might have people on the inside who are absolutely alarmed. Do we know how many people there are with a disability in prisons, or it's too hard to pinpoint?
So I can actually look this up. This was mentioned in the report. So firstly, we don't know how many people have disabilities because it's often not reported. So this is something that the Human Rights Watch report deals with, that Aboriginal people go in and then the prison doesn't make any attempt to record if people have disabilities or special needs, and this is one of the recommendations they make. But the broad estimates they have are that about 18% of Australians have disabilities, but they're about half of the prison population. But it could be higher because, like I said, they don't really, when they do intake, they don't say, or they don't try to investigate if people have disability and have special needs that need to be catered for.
This was a national report, so not just prisons in Western Australia, it was across the board. But what were some of the recommendations that the Human Rights Watch did come up with that would, you know, set things on the right path? And I mean, obviously, we've got to acknowledge that not every person with a disability within prison would be receiving this treatment, obviously. But what were some of the conclusions and recommendations that the Watch came up with?
So they called for things like ending solitary confinement against prisoners with disabilities. They called for national inquiries and I think probably state inquiries too, for implementing certain international law mechanisms for investigating these kinds of things. I think they called for more investment in the kind of care that's needed. And they're also kind of really ambitious recommendations. I think they called for additional recommendations, like we should have a human rights charter and things like that. As I'm sure you know, a lot of these reports, the recommendations are never really implemented. So if change is going to come, it's not going to come because of a human rights report. What we need is large-scale pressure on pretty much every government to treat people more humanely, I think.
Michael, does it change the way you view the world when, as a journalist, I mean, the power of the pen is enormous, and that you actually throw yourself into deciphering a report so much that it warrants a 5-series part to actually sort of get your head around what is happening and to try and make that available as widely as possible to readers. Does it change the way you view the world when you do actually pull something apart like that?
Well, I have an incredibly dark view of the world and have for quite a while. So in a sense, I kind of expect Australia to be an extremely racist and ableist and discriminatory country. And in that sense, I'm never really surprised when I find out that Australia is, you know, treating an Aboriginal person terribly. But at the same time, this report, and I've read a lot of upsetting things. Usually when you read a report that really looks at how Aboriginal people are treated in this country, it's pretty upsetting. And a lot of this is pretty harrowing reading.
And what motivated you to do what you did?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, the first example was I heard about Marla Noble, this person who was in prison for 10 years without trial, and there was no evidence that a crime was even committed. And since then, I've just tried to follow the issue a little bit. And when I heard about this report, I thought it was just going to stink without notice. And New Matilda doesn't have the same platform as Channel 10 or the corporate media, but I thought maybe I could try to draw some of its findings to a larger audience, because I think it was worth recognising how cruelly some people are being treated.
Well, you've certainly achieved that, Michael, so well done on that level, because the articles have been shared hundreds of times, and that's an enormous bounce-on effect that can have within the community. So it's really great that you've done what you've done. It's a five-part series for New Matilda. If anyone would like to check out more of it, just Google New Matilda and Behind Bars, and it will take you straight to the stories and links for edition 1, 2, 3, 4 and then 5. Really well written, and yes, horrific and shocking reading, but that's what people need to know so that there can actually be change for the future. So it's a really good series, and I know we've placed them all up on the Facebook page of the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia as well, so if you cannot find them online, you will definitely find them on the ALS Facebook page. No regrets about looking so deeply into this subject, Michael?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
All right. Well, look, well done on a great lot of journalism covering such an important issue, Australia's shocking cruelty to Aboriginal people with disabilities, parts 1 to 5. The journalist is Michael Brawl. Michael, thank you for your time. And if people would like to actually see the report itself, it was done by Human Rights Watch. So just go to the website and put in Human Rights Watch and you can find the report there as well. But this is the report sort of pulled apart and looked at different places and areas of it. And you've touched on some really important issues today on the program, Michael. So we thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Michael Brawl, New Matilda journalist, and interested and equipped with the law as well. And incredible insight if you want to check out these articles. A real mind-blowing insight into what can be happening behind closed doors. We are just about out of time here on Law Matters, our first program back on the airways for 2018. Glad you could spend it with us. Lots more programs to come fortnightly. Thank you to our listeners, not just in Perth, but in regional Western Australia and across the country through the National Indigenous Radio Service. My name is Jodie Hoffman, and I hope you can join me again in a fortnight's time for more of Law Matters. We're going to be having a chat with some of our lovely staff members in a fortnight's time to let you know about some community legal outreach work that has been happening in Perth and in regional areas of the state. We'll be chatting with Saba Rind, our Community Legal Education Officer, and also Ashley Truscott will be with us as well. And we're going to talk about the rights of prisoners. Ashley is a lawyer in our Human and Civil Rights Unit, so he's going to be talking about the rights of prisoners. So let's keep a focus on this. What are the rights of prisoners? And I guess we all know people that are behind bars, and you do not lose your human rights and you should not lose your dignity by being placed in that situation. From myself, Jodie Hoffman, enjoy the lovely to have your company. I look forward to it again in a fortnight's time.